this positive from the perspective that it was kind of a one of the black clouds on Petrobras. We also have the SEC investigation and the DOJ investigation, and they also have some disputes with individual investors.
Well, I think that Amazon and Google have been discounting, especially their entry-level smart devices, because it allows the consumer to try something that they may not be familiar with. And what's great about these devices is that you use them in one room and you're going to fall in love with it and then perhaps buy two or three more to have them all around the house.
What we did was to put together a consumer guide to buying a used vehicle for two reasons. One, to walk people through the process of what they need to do before they purchase a used car, but also to let them know that the law has changed so that here in Illinois, many used cars will now come with a 15-day or 500-mile warranty.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's January 4th, 2018. Glad you're here with us for another business day and another edition of The Opening Bell. We've got a good show for you this morning. A little bit later on, Heather Long will be here from the Washington Post, business reporter. We'll talk a little bit about the economy. Also, a lot of companies, well, we've seen a handful of companies so far, offer $1,000 bonuses to employees after the tax cut. How are bonuses going to be different from, let's say, pay raises? And why would the latter be more important to you, the worker? We'll talk with Heather in our second segment this morning. Our thought leader, Doug Myers, is coming up shortly here in our Thought Leader Thursday segment. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, we'll begin in Asia, where the markets there hit a 26-year high on the Nikkei. The Nikkei up almost 741 points. Which is about 3.5%. The Hang Seng up about 175 points. That's about 0.5%. Good numbers, rest of Asia as well. In Europe, markets are generally higher as well, with the DAX in Germany up about 125 points. That's almost a full percent. The CAC in France up almost a percent as well. And the FTSE in London is up just a fraction. Here in the United States, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street, with Dow futures up 68 points right now. Crude oil is trading at $61.74 a barrel, which is up just about 11 cents. A couple of stories that we're watching for you this morning. The latest on Intel, you may have heard the story yesterday. Security researchers at Google say they've discovered serious security flaws affecting computer processors built by Intel and other chip makers. Google's Project Zero team says the flaw would allow bad actors to gather passwords and other sensitive data from a system's memory. The tech company disclosed the vulnerability not long after Intel said it was working to patch it. Intel says the average computer user won't experience significant slowdowns as it is fixed. That has not been the case for some. We found Reddit yesterday that indicated that after some of this was fixed on some computers on the West Coast at a server farm there, that there was a noticeable slowdown is how it was described. So we'll see. Intel stock fell 3.4%. And then this story added to that, the CEO of Intel, Brian Krzanich, sold millions of dollars worth of shares after the company was informed of those vulnerabilities. In a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission in late November, it was disclosed that he sold hundreds of thousands of shares that previously he previously owned and that he had acquired as stock options. There was no indication that what he did was illegal, at least not right now. Apparently there was a plan in place where the company could do such a thing, but it remains to be seen whether or not he acted in good faith or not. And Merrill Lynch has blocked clients and financial advisors from trading who trade on their behalf, on behalf of clients, to buy from buying Bitcoin, citing concerns over the cryptocurrency's investment suitability. The ban applies to all accounts and precludes the firm's roughly 17,000 advisors, not only from pitching Bitcoin-related investments, but also from executing client requests to trade the Grayscale Investment Trust Bitcoin Fund. The ban extends an existing policy barring access to newly launched Bitcoin futures. It's Thought Leader Thursday, and we're happy to have with us for the new year this morning Doug Myers in the Thought Leader chair this morning. Doug is an SVP and private banking regional manager at Associated Bank. Lots going on this morning. Doug, good morning. Happy New Year.
Thank you, Steve. Glad to be here.
And Happy New Year to you.
Same to you. Thank you very much.
Let's talk a little bit about where we're at as the year begins. Tax bill, regulations going by the wayside, reform with regulations. If you had to look back at the old year, what among those would be the biggest for your industry?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't call regulations going by the wayside. You know, banking remains a very highly regulated industry.
Fair enough.
And although that some things are changing, I would not begin to tell you that, banking regulations are going by the wayside. And I know you were kind of joking, but seriously, though, we're a highly regulated business, and you know, there's constant oversight and there's constant examining of the banks, and keeps us on the straight and narrow, we hope.
And my mistake for overgeneralizing there, and maybe that's something that we should touch on, because I think people, when they hear the headlines and they don't really listen for the full story, that might be their impression. Talk to us about what reform and regulations has happened that's important.
Well, there's certainly Basel III, which is coming between 2010 and 2022 in phased-in regulations. And the gist of Basel III says that banks have to continue to raise capital. And that ensures the strength of the banking industry. Capital requirements are still increasing in the banking world, where you don't have a meltdown that happened, you know, 10 years ago. And we want the industry to remain healthy, and it's actually healthier than it ever has been due to the increased and continuing increase of capital. And, you know, capital is what saves the banks when there's, you know, bad loan cycles and a bad credit cycle, which always happens. And we're in a good cycle right now, but we will see another tough credit cycle, and you have loan losses. And that's what capital will soften those loan losses and keep your reserves and keep the bank afloat. And the whole industry, I think, is a lot stronger as a result of continued increased capital.
Stronger so that the new Federal Reserve Chair, when he was in doing his confirmation hearings and being confirmed, talked about banks, both mid-sized banks like Associated Bank and also the big banks. About the big banks, he said that he didn't think any of them were too big to fail anymore. And mid-sized banks, that the regulations reforms that are happening now has made that industry, that part of the banking industry, even more stronger. Would you agree with all that?
I would agree with that. And the regulators look at, you know, banks under $50 billion, which is where we fall, and then banks between $50 and $100 billion, and then over $100 billion has other sets of requirements that wouldn't be for Associated being under $50 billion. But yes, and I think these various tranches in the regulations as to the size of banks keeps the industry healthy. I know we had a rate increase toward the latter part of 2017, and we're expecting, the Fed's expecting possibly three rate increases this year in 2018, and I think that will continue to help the banks. The margins will increase as interest rates rise a little bit, and we just saw a quarter interest rate hike, I think December the 14th it was. And so maybe the 13th, actually. So I think, you know, if we continue to see a couple of two or three rate increases in 2018, it'll continue to help the bank's margins. On the other side of the equation, it will cost more from consumers on mortgages and their credit card and their car loans. They'll pay more as interest rates increase a little bit. But, you know, relatively speaking, they're still very low. You know, our prime rate now is 4.5%. And if you look at historically for the past 40 years where prime rate has been, 4.5 and 4 is not a bad rate.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Opening Bell, 5:23 this morning. Glad you're here with us. Our thought leader conversation this morning is with Doug Myers from Associated Bank. Doug, we were talking before the break about banks no longer too big to fail. At least some of the big ones are. Mid-sized banks have lots of good capital, too. I'm curious, to prevent the next crisis from happening, this capital, is this money that your banks have just kind of squirreled away?
Well, that's what it is. And you won't have the number of bank failures that happen, or you won't have the federal government having to prop up the whole banking industry like what happened in 2008 and 2009. So you'll see banks be able to weather the storm when you do have a difficult credit cycle that will come. It's not a matter of if, but when. There's always been cycles. Right now, the credit cycle is pretty good, and it's been good for, you know, 7 or 8 years now. But, the capital requirements are going to help soften the blow when we do get into a credit cycle. The other thing I think that's going to be continued importance in the banking business is the security issue. You know, the security issues with data breaches and credit card fraud and wire fraud have been so astronomic this year, and I think that's going to continue. And the banks are certainly spending a lot of dollars, once again, out of the capital to have a cushion of capital to be able to spend on technology. And, you know, people want to trust their banks. People want to feel that their money is safe. They want to be comforted and secure in that knowing their credit card transactions are going to be secure. And that's not always the case. And so banks are still spending hundreds of millions of dollars every year to keep up and to introduce new security measures. And that's a big thing in the banking business, and it's going to continue for the next foreseeable future.
One of the stories in the headlines in the last couple of weeks was about American Express and I believe MasterCard saying that they're phasing out now signatures on credit card transactions finally, probably in the 2018 this year is when it's going to happen. That's further evidence that they feel strong enough about their security. Is it?
That's a really good point. And I think there's a lot of trends. If you look at the credit card business, there's a lot of fraud in that business. And I think banks are coming up with some creative ways, excuse me, to offset the risk. One of the things they're doing, which, is interesting, and banks are starting to use this concept called geolocation. And that means if your phone is in Philadelphia, where you are, and your credit card happens to be in Phoenix, let's say someone stole your credit card and it's in Phoenix, the credit card transactions are not going to work. And so now you've got your smartphone app paired with your credit card to make sure that it's with you and the credit card transaction will be completed. So that's an interesting technology advance that I think will help the credit card fraud situation.
The takeaway from that is make sure the location services are turned on if you have a banking app.
Well, that's one of the things. And another interesting concept that banks are starting to use is letting the consumer go on their app and block their credit card. So if you're not using it, for example, for a couple of days, they're going to go in and block it on your phone application, and they want to go to a store and use a credit card for a transaction, they can unblock it. And so I think that technology and that new thing that the banks are trying to figure out is going to help the fraud situation and the security situation for your credit cards. There's a lot of technology ideas that are being thrown out there that I think make a lot of sense.
There's a commercial on, I can't remember which bank it's for. It's not Associated. I knew that immediately. But it was a guy who had forgot his wallet and had the bank app. And he was able to go to an ATM and take a picture of a code that came up on the screen and was able to use the ATM without even having a wallet and a card.
And I've seen that commercial, and that's another technology idea that I think will take off as we continue in the future.
Lots of technical advances and moving very, very fast. Let's talk a little bit about some of the things that we can do in 2018 for banking and credit for ourselves. I found a list, a really cool list of important things you can do, ranging from paying, you know, setting up automatic bill payments to saving money to tracking spending and organizing. What would you say is the most important of those or the best of those?
I think it all comes under the umbrella of money management. I know we are spending a lot of time and energy. We're rolling out a new website at Associated Bank, and it will have modules in there for tracking your expenses and tracking your spending and tracking your income. And it just gives the consumer more tools in managing their whole banking relationship and managing their money. It lets them know their spending habits. And I think any information you can give to the consumer is good information to help them, equip them with some money management tips and money management ideas.
One of the other on the list was making sure you start saving money. If you're not, you were talking earlier about some of the things that we were hoping for coming from higher interest rates. Obviously, banks will be making more money, but also the possibility that people who are saving money in banks will actually get some interest on that.
Well, the interest rates are going to continue to rise, and that will help the savings rates. Savings rates have been very minimal, and it's impacted the liquidity situation of many of our clients, and there's just not a safe place to put savings that pays much interest. And as interest rates continue to go up, if we have, like I said, two or three this year in 2018, I think that, you know, rates are going to go up, savings rates are going to go up, and it will help the motivate people to continue to save.
One of the other first of the year, New Year, best of advice tips is to make sure everything is organized. I know we talk a lot about it being in the cloud and having things out there in the ether, but there's still some of us that keep paperwork, bank statements, that sort of thing. Should now be the time we get all that organized?
Well, absolutely. And I think as you continue to have paper, you know, it's important to once again think about security. You know, have a shredder. And when you get those bank statements updated, shred the old. And you just it's so important to be able to shred old checks and old statements. You don't want the account numbers and your names floating around. Same with your Social Security number on papers. You want to make sure that you're keeping them secure. You know, get a shredder in your office at home or in the office. I know we have on every hallway, there's many shredder bins that we put all our customer information in when we're done with it. And we make sure it gets shred every so often. And that's so important for security.
I bet you're a big proponent, too, of making a budget for yourself every year.
Absolutely. Yeah. And once again, it goes into make sure you have a little left over for saving every month. And I think as we talk to clients and we look at financial planning for our clients, that all goes into the equation to say, look, you know, you're X amount of years to retirement. How much do you want to have? And let's build a plan to get there. And once again, financial planning is very important, especially in the wealth management business, as people prepare to have liquidity events. They prepare to have expenses coming up, college, cars, houses for kids. It's very important to be able to have a plan to go forward on.
Doug, any New Year resolutions on your personally?
Not personally. Everything hopefully will go smoothly this year, and we're expecting a good year.
Well, Happy New Year to you. It's always good chatting with you.
Thank you, Steve. Same to you.
Doug Myers is a Senior Vice President and Private Banking Regional Manager at Associated Bank. It's our Thought Leader Conversation. Remember, you can listen to our past conversations at WGNRadio.com. On the opening bell page, you can also follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter. And also head over to AssociatedBank.com/Thought Leadership to learn more about our thought leaders. Hear more of our conversations there as well.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:40 here on our Thursday edition of the program. Lots going on in the economy these days. Stock market racing higher. Tax cut in place. The bill approved right before the holidays. Heather Long is with us this morning. She's an economics correspondent at the Washington Post. Heather, good morning and Happy New Year.
Same to you, Steve.
I hope you had a good holiday season, and back at it, I guess, here in the new year. What would you say was the biggest business story of the year last year?
Oh, wow, that's a good one. I think from most people's perspective, it probably was the stock market's incredible rise. I mean, it just seemed like every month we were racing through a new, through a new barrier to higher and higher and higher. And I think the other big, that's probably the story that's well known. I think the story that's less well known is we finally see some uptick in business spending that just wasn't happening for most of the 8 years under President Obama's recovery. But a lot of businesses obviously claiming that they're spending more now because of the regulatory rollback and anticipation of tax cuts. But if that continues, that could really power growth this year.
And business spending with what, on capital and on investments, improvements in their companies?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, everything from whether it's building new factories to mostly what we saw was going out and buying new equipment. But again, that just was happening at an anemic pace. Sometimes some of the quarters it was flat under President Obama, under 1%, and now we're now we're kind of 2-3% a quarter. So that's a huge shift up.
You know, and even as we speak this morning, the markets seem to be racing higher. Asia had a good morning this morning, and all signs point to maybe Dow 25,000. You and me and everybody that's been through this, we know that there has to be a point where this stops, or does there?
I mean, I agree. It's such a odd thing to look at these stock market headlines and then to look at what's dominating the news networks and then the news websites and your radio shows. It's all this political talk. And I was thinking the political strategist Ian Bremmer of the Eurasia Group put out a paper on January 2nd saying that this is the year that there could be a political crisis equivalent to the financial crisis of 2008. So a really dire prediction for those political, all the political morass we see around the world. And yet it doesn't seem to be putting even a break. The brakes aren't even being tapped on the market. It seems like investors are really just ignoring political crises and the latest from the White House, and then focusing on the fact that that they think this is going to be a great year economically, largely because of the tax cuts.
And not only businesses, but consumers. We see report after report that consumers remain pretty confident as well, like both are just ignoring what's happening in Washington.
It does seem that way. And again, it's particularly interesting with consumers, as you and I have talked about many times on the show, that we still haven't seen that wage growth kick in yet. I know there's been a lot made of the fact that several companies like AT&T have come out and announced that they'll do a one-time bonus for their workers of $1,000 because of the tax cut. And look, that's real money for workers, but that's a one-time bonus. That's not a real wage increase. We just have not seen widespread wage increases yet in this economy. So consumers, they seem buoyant. They seem to be going out and spending. It was a pretty good retail shopping season around for Christmas this year, but you sort of wonder, do people really think their salaries are going to keep going up?
You've been writing about it, and others too, about the tax. You mentioned the bonuses, these one-time bonuses that a handful of companies have been paying out. Those bonuses are a lot different from a true pay raise, though, aren't they?
Exactly. Yeah, that's what we were just saying, that it's a one-time hit. So that really helps the company's bottom line because they're not locking in to pay these increases every year. It's a one-time $1,000. So even for a company like AT&T, you know, you're looking at paying about $20 million or so out. But that's a drop in the bucket compared to how much money they're going to save every year for the next foreseeable future on their tax bill. So it's really wait and see if we're actually going to finally see these wage increases. This could easily be the year on the economic front. Growth is expected to remain strong. So we came in last year about 2.6% growth in 2017. A lot of people forecasting, including the Federal Reserve, that that's going to even inch higher, more like 2.7, 2.8, 2.9 for this year. And unemployment, this could be the year. We're so close. We're at 4.1% right now. big jobs report out Friday, we could easily see in the next coming months that we tick under 4%. And, you know, that's would be the first time that's happened since the dot-com boom, so since 2000, and, you know, that's going to be a big milestone for people. It's going to make a lot of headlines, even though it's just a small decrease in the unemployment rate.
Yeah, I know. I saw yesterday or the day before, was it what chief strategist at J.P. Morgan even suggested that the unemployment rate could fall to 3.4% by the end of the year. That would be a huge number.
Yeah, right. That then we're looking at kind of best, you know, best in decades, best in sort of 60s or 70s era. So I think people underestimate, again, there's all this political turmoil going on, the latest Steve Bannon versus Donald Trump and the White House feud, divorce, whatever you want to call it. But again, those underlying fundamentals of the economy do look pretty strong right now, and I think that's what's really helping to drive the market. But you're right that at some point you have to ask, isn't all of this baked in already? You know, the tax cuts, that's been known. That's been known for several days now since it passed. So what's really driving the market even higher now? And I think that's where you're starting to see some people scratch their heads and say, you know, wait a minute. There, in Washington, where I'm sitting, I can tell you there's a lot of chatter. We've been calling around our sources in the White House and Congress. You know, big debate about whether this infrastructure bill is really going to happen. That's the other piece that supposedly would really be a big boost, a big stimulus to the economy this year and next. And it started out, remember, once President Trump was first elected, we were going to get a $1 trillion infrastructure package. So really, really big infusion of spending, you know, similar to that stimulus we saw under President Obama in the crisis in the early years, the recession. You know, now that's been scaled back and whittled down, and people are talking about maybe a $200 billion package with a lot of public-private type partnership spending. So much, much more modest infusion of cash, if it happens at all.
One of your recent pieces, I think just yesterday or the day before, and you do a lot of this writing about the towns, these small towns in America that were the headquarters of middle class for so long, the forgotten towns, as you've written about them. What are people in those towns saying, Heather? And because that's really where we're going to see Donald Trump's support either stay or go, isn't it?
I think so. And I do think he genuinely wants to help people in what he likes to call the forgotten town or the forgotten people. I have to say, when I reached out to the White House, you know, we do that a lot every day. This was when I reached out to them about this forgotten town article. It was one of the fastest time response times I've gotten from the White House. They do seem to want to portray themselves as caring about the little guy and the little girl in middle America in the Rust Belt. Yeah, but these are hard issues, right? We've seen in 1960s, Lyndon Johnson declared the war on poverty in Appalachia, and things have only gotten worse there since, basically. And so, you know, these are not easy issues. I think the piece that I wrote is really this debate about, for a while in economics, there was this belief that if you live in a struggling town that hasn't changed much since the 50s or 60s, the industry is going away, the manufacturing jobs are disappearing, then there was this belief that you should move, that you should do what many of our ancestors did, and you should migrate into a different part of the country where there are more jobs and more opportunities. So cities like Denver and Seattle and Austin, Texas, that are really on fire, and Atlanta. But, you know, Donald Trump is, and actually, interestingly, the Bernie Sanders sort of liberal contingent seem to agree that actually there has to be a better way than just expecting people to leave, and they're trying to figure out ways. Is it government money that needs to go to back to these towns? That's what a lot of the Bernie Sanders crowd thinks needs to happen. Or, you know, Donald Trump's trying to figure out if there's kind of a private sector solution to get jobs and industry back to these towns. Obviously, he's been rolling back regulations in the hopes that the coal mining industry revives. We have seen a huge revival of manufacturing in the past year, best year for manufacturing since 2004 that we just wrapped up in 2017. But it remains to be seen if people are in these struggling cities that are small towns that have struggled for decades, are really going to feel better off and get those jobs again.
Yeah, I know your article talks about some places in the Deep South and in the Rust Belt where unemployment is still above 6%. I'd have to believe that a good, strong infrastructure bill would get some of those manufacturing areas busy working again.
That's the hope. A year ago, I was sitting in America's poorest white town, which is in eastern Kentucky in Appalachia, and talking to the mayor there, a city called Beattyville. That was their hope. They said, look, part of the reason we don't have industry in our town anymore, we used to really be a big hub on the railroad, but that's gone away. And so what they felt they really needed was a major highway closer to them. But again, is that, there's limited dollars when we're going from talking about a $1 trillion infrastructure plan to talking only about $200 billion now. That's very much less dollars to go around. And so where's that money going to go? Is it really going to go to a small town in eastern Kentucky that struggled for years? Or is it going to go to places like the tunnel into New York City between the rail tunnel between New York and New Jersey, which is the most trafficked part of the rail system in the entire United States, and is in dire need of an upgrade. It's a massive, very costly upgrade. So, that's where it's going to be really telling if this, A, if the infrastructure bill does happen, and B, where's that money going to go?
Heather, it's always good talking with you. All the best to you for 2018, and we look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thanks, Steve. Take care.
All right. Heather Long is an economics correspondent at The Washington Post. You can follow her on Twitter at @ByHeatherLong and The Washington Post @ Washington Post.